Chapter 48. Gareth Orsul was not pleased to see his Aethling. He hadn't summoned Tensor, and despite all the precautions Nefdada had taken, bringing Tensor to Gareth's private chambers and magically tearing out the tongues of any servant they passed so they couldn't speak of what they'd seen, this castle still had too many eyes. It was all too likely that someone had seen Tensor come. Certainly the prisoners in the Maw would have seen him leave. In Gareth's estimation, there was an even chance that Tensor had just destroyed his usefulness. Gareth didn't like his Aethlings to take liberties. No one made decisions for the God King. Tensor saw the displeasure on Gareth's face and hurried through the end of his story.
I thought Logan might make a perfect sacrifice for Kali. May her name be revered forever, as she takes her new home, Tensor said, his voice quavering. And I figured that by now Baron Kirov must have been captured.
You did you? Gareth asked.
He hasn't?
Baron Kirov plunged to death from a mountain pass trying to escape, Nef said. His body was not recoverable. Tensor's mouth moved like a fish's as he tried to absorb the news.
Your guilty verdict will have to stick, Gareth said. It doesn't matter. These Cenarians have not appreciated my mercy anyway. They will be a lesson for future conquests. Your usefulness, boy, is at an end. The Cenarians are not pacified. You have failed your Urdan.
Your Holiness, Tensor said, falling to his knees. Please, I'll do anything. Use me however you like. I'll serve you with my whole heart. I swear, I'll do anything.
Yes, Gareth said. You will.
On his own merits, Tensor was nothing special. He'd survived his training, barely, but he was not a son of Gareth's soul. He never would be. He would never be his heir. But Tensor didn't know that. More importantly, Moburu didn't either.
Nef, where is the Virgin Queen?
Your Holiness, the wizened Vergmeister said. She awaits your pleasure in the North Tower.
Ah, yes.
Not that Gareth had forgotten, but he wouldn't have Nef know how much the girl intrigued him.
I could send for her immediately if it pleases you to sacrifice her, Nef said.
The pair of them would be a nice offering for Kali as she takes her new Ras, wouldn't they? Gareth asked.
But he wouldn't surrender Jeannine, and he needed Tensor to distract Moburu.
My seed.
I have great hopes for you, Gareth said.
The death of Baron Kirov wasn't your fault, so it pleases me to give you a second chance. Go make yourself presentable so you look like my son, and then fetch this Logan Gyre. I won't have him escape from under my nose a second time. I will give you your new Urdan anon.
As soon as the door closed behind Tensor, Gareth turned to Vredmeister Dada.
Take him to the Maw, and have him build a Ferali beside his brothers. Help him and praise his work in front of Moburu. Do as much of it yourself as you must. Now, send in Hugh Gibbet.
I'm not sure how this is going to work, Sister Ariel said. The woods were fully dark now, except for the light of her magic. If I saw correctly, this form of magic should be especially easy for you to absorb. Just take in as much as you can.
Then what? Kylar said.
Then you run.
I run? That's the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
You speak when you should listen, the wolf's voice echoed in his head.
He gritted his teeth. Sorry, tell me more.
You won't get tired, I think. You'll still pay a price for whatever of your own magic you use, but you won't pay nearly as much for what you take from me, Sister Ariel said. I'm ready. Are you?
Kylar shrugged. The truth was, he felt more than ready.
His eyes were tingling the same way they'd tingled when he'd first bound the Kakari. He rubbed them again.
I'm getting more powerful.
The thought was a revelation. He'd been learning to control his talent better during his training on the rooftops, but this was different. This was different, and he'd felt it before. He'd felt it every time he died. Every time he died, his talent expanded, and something was changing in his vision, too. The thought should have been exhilarating. Instead, he felt the cold fingertips of dread brush down his naked back.
There must be a cost. There must be.
Of course, it had already cost Kylar Elene. The thought made him ache anew. Maybe the costs were merely human ones. The wolf had spoken of Durzo committing a blasphemy, even worse than taking money to die. Had Durzo committed suicide? Yes. Kylar was sure of it. Had it been just for curiosity, a lust for power, or had he felt trapped? Suicide was impossible. To a man as unhappy, as lonely, as isolated as Durzo had been, being bound to life would surely be odious. Oh, Master, I'm so sorry, I didn't understand. And just like that, the raw wound that was Durzo's death tore open again. Time had done little to heal Kylar. Even knowing he had released Durzo from an existence he didn't want was no consolation. Kylar had murdered a legend, murdered a man who had given him everything, and he had done it with hatred in his heart. Even if Durzo had intended it as a sacrifice, Kylar hadn't killed him for mercy. He'd murdered him for raw vengeance. Kylar remembered the sweet bile of fury, of hatred for every trial Durzo had put him through. That bile had saturated him, kept him strong as he clung, wounded, to the ceiling of that tunnel in the stacks. Now Durzo was truly dead, released from the prison of his own flesh, but it felt lonely and raw and unjust. Durzo's reward for 7 centuries of isolation and service to some jail that he didn't understand shouldn't have been death. It should have been an unveiling of the worth of that goal. It should have been reunion and communion commensurate with 700 years of isolation. Kylar was just coming to understand his master now, and now that he wanted to make things right, there was no Durzo to make it right with. He'd been clipped out of the tapestry of Kylar's life, leaving an ugly hole that nothing could fill.
"I can only hold the full measure of my talent for so long, young man," Sister Ariel said, sweat beading on her forehead.
"Oh, right," Kylar said. A pool of concentrated light burned in Sister Ariel's hands. Kylar had put his hand in it, willing the power into himself. Nothing happened. He brought the Kakari up to the skin of his palm. Still, nothing happened. It was strangely embarrassing to look so inept.
"Just let it happen," Sister Ariel said.
Just let it happen. That pissed him off. It was that falsely wise crap that teachers pulled. "Your body knows what to do. You're thinking too much." "Right.
Will you look away for a sec?" he asked.
"Absolutely not," Sister Ariel said.
He'd done this before while wearing the Kakari as a second skin. He knew it could be done.
"I can't hold this for much longer," Sister Ariel said.
Kylar drew the Kakari into a ball in his hand and palmed it, holding his hand palm down over the pool of magic in the sister's hands. He thought it was quick enough she didn't see him.
"Come on, please work. Since you ask so nicely."
Kylar blinked at that. Then the pooled magic winked out like a candle in a high wind. Kylar only had a moment to be unnerved before the thought was obliterated. Where the metallic sphere touched his palm, Kylar felt like he was holding lightning. He lost control of his body as it arced through him, freezing him in place, ignoring his desire to pull away, pull away, pull away, before he fried. Sister Ariel was pulling back, but the Kakari stretched between them, sucking magic like a lamprey sucking blood. Kylar felt himself filling, gloriously filling with magic, with power and light and life. He could see the very veins in his hand, the veins in the few remaining leaves overhead. He could see life squirming and wriggling everywhere in the forest. He saw through the grasses to the fox's burrow, through the bark of the fir tree, to the woodpecker's nest. He could feel the kiss of starlight on his skin. He could smell 100 different men from the rebel camp, tell what they'd eaten, how much they'd worked, who was healthy, and who was sick. He could hear so much it was overwhelming. He could barely pull the strands apart. The wind made leaves clang against each other like cymbals. There was a roar that was the breathing of two, no, three large animals, himself and Sister Ariel, and one other. The leaves themselves were breathing. He heard the heartbeat of an owl, the thunderous wallop of a knee hitting the ground. "Stop, stop!" Sister Ariel said. She was slumped on the ground, and still, magic flowed from her. Kylar yanked the Kakari back and took it into his body. Sister Ariel fell, but he didn't even notice her. Light, magic, life, dazzled, bled, exploded from every pore on his body. It was too much. It hurt. Every beat of his heart scoured his veins with more power. His body was too small. "Go!" Sister Ariel said. It was ludicrously slow. He waited while her lips moved, and the whisper thundered forth. "Save!"
"Save?"
"Save what?" Why didn't she just say it? Why was everything so slow, so interminably, so damnably slow? He could barely hold himself still. He was bleeding light. His head throbbed. Another chamber of his heart compressed while he waited and waited.
"The..."
"Save the king," his impatience supplied. He had to save the king. He had to save Logan. Before Sister Ariel spoke again, Kylar was running. Running? No, running was too pedestrian a term. He was moving twice the speed of the fastest man, three times. It was sheer joy. It was sheer moment. For there was nothing but the moment. He dodged and twisted. He looked ahead as far as his glowing eyes could see. He was moving so fast that the air began to battle against him. His feet couldn't gain the traction they needed to push him faster. He threatened to leave the earth. Then he saw a camp ahead, right in the middle of his path. He jumped, and he did leave the earth. 100 paces he flew, 200, straight at a tree. He threw the Kakari forward and jerked as he slammed through the 3-foot-wide trunk. Wood exploded in every direction, but he kept going. Behind him, he heard the tree cracking and beginning to fall, but he was already too far away to hear it land. So he ran. He extended the Kakari before him so it cut the wind, extended it behind him so that it pressed his feet to the earth so he could run faster still. The night faded, and he ran. The sun rose, and still he ran, a glutton devouring miles. Sister Ariel crawled back to the tree where she'd bound Ulysandra. It took a long time, but she had to. She wasn't sure if she slept that she would ever wake up. Finally, she reached Uli. The little girl was awake, her eyes red, tear tracks covering her cheeks. So she knew Kylar had awakened, and that Sister Ariel had concealed her, betrayed her. There was nothing Sister Ariel could say. There was nothing either of them could do anyway. Sister Ariel had loosed Vi and Kylar like twin hunting falcons. There was no calling them back now. If Uli were still here when Ariel awoke, she'd take the girl to the Chantry. It would be a long trip, and it might give her some time to think about what she'd just experienced. By all the gods! The boy had sucked her dry, and still had room for more. Her, one of the most powerful women in the Chantry. He was so young, so blithe and terrifying. It took all her willpower to unbind Uli. Touching magic now was like drinking liquor while hungover, but in a moment, it was done, and she collapsed.